Hi, I'm Dylan Vikrama, and I'm chatting with Andy Dukes on Ride and Talk, the BMW Motorrad podcast.
Greetings, everybody, and welcome back to Ride and Talk. If it's your first time here, it's great to have you along for the ride. Today's podcast is very close to my heart because it's about a guy who inspired me to ride around the world back in 2017, although his original journey involved a lot more seawater than mine did. 700 kilometres of the Pacific Ocean, in fact. Life sometimes invents stories that are more incredible than any Hollywood filmmaker could ever think up. One such story is that of Dylan Vikrama, a boy who often looked out to sea from his native Sri Lanka and passionately longed to know what lay beyond the horizon. He eventually got his chance many years later on a BMW R1150 GS adventure called Bruce, on which he travelled more than 210,000 kilometres on four continents over a period of 3 years. But the real adventure began at the Darien Gap between Panama and Colombia, where all roads ended. Undaunted, Dylan built a raft from 10 empty oil drums, equipped it with a sail borrowed from an abandoned boat, and then Bruce the BMW came into play. Dylan extended the shaft of the R1150 GSA and integrated the motorcycle into the raft's frame, so that it could serve as a motor for the floating platform. He filled 120 litres of petrol into jerry cans for fuel, took a few provisions, and off he went. Out in the Pacific, he got caught in strong currents that pulled him deep out to sea. For days, he floated aimlessly in the ocean, not knowing where he was anymore and in what direction he needed to sail. What happened out there is a spellbinding story that was first published in Dylan's book, When the Road Ends, but has now been made into a feature-length documentary movie. First though, we need to go right back to the beginning and the island of Sri Lanka, where Dylan's story began. Well, good afternoon, Dylan. Welcome to Ride and Talk. It's a real pleasure to have you on as our guest.
Hi, Andy. It's good to be here once again. How are you doing?
Yeah, it's been a long time. It's been a few years for sure.
I think it was 2016 we met last, right?
Yeah. And as for your story, it's hard to know where to start, but I guess we've got to go back to Sri Lanka in your childhood, where you always daydreamed of adventure and of course, yearned to travel the world.
Yeah, my childhood, that was a long time ago, you know. As a child, I guess I always dreamed of traveling the world, not just traveling on a motorcycle. That is something a lot of youngsters do, right? Even though I didn't have a motorcycle in those days, I just watched people who had. And I remember as a 12-year-old, someone gave me a lift. Just took me for a couple of kilometers, and I couldn't stop laughing. Because, you know, I had this grin the whole time. And I guess that changed quite a lot.
Yeah, I mean, it was a tough childhood. You know, you're known for your smiles, but going back to Sri Lanka, it was a tough childhood where there was extreme poverty and there were many hardships. I think your father was killed also when you were just 6 years old by two robbers.
Yeah, that's right. I think that was the biggest hit we took as a family. My mother was only just 27 years old, and my father was 32 when he got killed by two robbers. We had we thought we had a bright future. He's a upcoming businessman, and you know, he had a shop in Colombo where he sold tractor spare parts and tractors, and but all of a sudden, you know, his death brought destruction to my family, actually. My mother didn't know where he had invested his money, and from one day to the next, we became poor. We lost everything, and my mother was a simple housewife up until that point, and then she had to start working. You know, she didn't have a skilled She had not learned a skilled trade, so she had to learn to sew, and she started, you know, sewing clothes in a garment, and that was a pretty hard childhood. Even then, you know, she worked like 7 days a week, probably 10, 12 hours a day, and even then she couldn't earn enough money for us to have, you know, enough food. So I remember sometimes how I cried in the night because of hunger, because we did not have a single corn of rice in the house, and we didn't have our own house. You know, we were just basically going from place to place. We were renting at the beginning. You know, my father, he had rented a large house in Colombo. And his idea was to build a house, and they were looking for a property to buy and then build up a house. And then, you know, he died, so we were just left with nothing. And my mother had to keep on, you know, moving from one place to the other, because, you know, the rent was too much to bear.
Yeah. I mean, it's certainly for yourself as the eldest child, and I think there were four mouths to feed as well, and the support from your father's old business partners seemed to disappear into thin air, you know, after he was gone.
Absolutely.
So it can't have been easy as the eldest child. I guess you also had to become the head of a family in a way.
Yeah, I did take some responsibility. After school, I remember going to work in a small factory where we produced small rubber parts. So after school, I just went there and worked until it got dark. So that gave us a few rupees more. I gave everything what I earned in that little factory to my mother, so we could buy a little bit of food.
Oh, brilliant. And obviously, even though you had your head down, you must have kept dreaming of adventure and travel to faraway places. And of course, you eventually got your chance as a man in his 30s, I think, you know, living in Switzerland with your own business and plenty of money. But still, there seemed to be something missing. I think you were restless and had itchy feet, as we say in English.
Yes, I don't say that I had plenty of money, but I was comfortable compared to how I grew up as a child with nothing, and I was fortunate enough to come to Europe, living in Switzerland, and I had established my business. I was running a motor car repair service workshop, buying and selling cars. So I was doing pretty good. But you know, later on, I started asking myself, you know, what this life is all about, you know, the purpose of life. I don't know if that was a midlife crisis because I was hitting my 40s, but I guess not, because, you know, I'd been going through that phase for a number of years.
I think we all have these conversations with ourselves around that time, don't we? What we've done, what we've achieved, what we still feel that we have to achieve, what's out there, what's gone before.
Exactly. There was a time when one of my customers, he was someone with quite a bit of money, and he offered me a loan. He said, you know, you could have up to 1 million to, you know, build up your business. Do better, because, you know, you are a great mechanic and, you know, you seem to be doing quite well business wise. So actually, I started dreaming about, you know, expanding my business. But at the same time, I started asking the question, hey, what am I doing? You make a lot of money, and then what? And that's the starting point of all this. I knew that, you know, I was dreaming of traveling the world as a child. And then all of a sudden, I remember it was one winter evening. I was under the shower after a hard day's work. I came and I was like, I want to get out. And it is time to do this world tour. And that was it. And then I started planning to sell off my business. It didn't take long, actually. You know, there's a funny thing about you know, when I think about something, it automatically happens. I don't know, you know, what's wrong with me, or you know, why that happens. Like a couple of weeks later, a guy walks into my my garage and he said, "Hey, Dylan, I'm looking for a place to buy like yours." And I said, "Here it is. You can buy it." That was it.
Wow. I think you must have, you know, good luck charm about you or something like that, because things like that don't happen to everybody. But of course, they do say that the hardest thing to do when planning a big trip like you did was actually taking the decision to go. But it sounds as if your time in taking the decision and actually leaving was pretty soon.
It was. I mean, it only took a couple of months until everything was ready and I was on the road. You know, it wasn't such a spectacular departure. I mean, there weren't people, you know, waving me goodbye, and there was not I'm going on this long adventure trip. And I had no plans, you know. I just wanted to get out and see the world and find answers to the meaning of life and what this life is. Because, you know, I had been, as I said earlier, I was asking this question, the purpose of life, for a number of years, because money is one thing, but having that inner peace is something else.
Absolutely. And of course, you eventually set off, I think it was it in 2011?
2010.
2010, was it? Okay. On a BMW R1150 GS Adventure that you called Bruce. What was the reason for the name?
I have no idea why I called my motorcycle Bruce, because I guess it's because of my size. You know, I'm a small guy, 5'6". And a lot of people don't even believe when I tell that is my motorcycle. So, you know, that bike being so large, I guess, you know, I couldn't give it a girl's name. Bruce Willis, you know, Die Hard, all that. I don't know. Yeah, probably it's because of that.
Yeah, understood totally. I used to own a GS Adventure 1150, and I wish I'd never sold it. But there you go. So 200,000 kilometres, 3 years, 4 continents later, you found yourself in Panama, where all roads suddenly ended. Tell us about the Darien Gap of that time, with the jungle, the swamps and the drug runners.
Yeah, Darien jungle, actually, I didn't know anything about the Darien until I got to Canada. So in Canada, I met a guy, another biker, and he told me about the Darien Gap. He said, you know, you have to organize a boat to go across it. And I was like, what? You know, there's this Pan-American highway. That's the longest road in the world. But, you know, as we know, it now that this road doesn't continue all the way from Alaska down to Argentina. So Darien, how to go around the Darien was a mystery in 2012, 2013, because there weren't many information in the internet. So if you just Google it, you found nothing. You know, there were no boats, nothing. So I thought, why not give it a go? You know, you're on an adventure trip, and you know, you can do this adventure in a unique way. So that's how I came up with this idea of building a raft and going around it. Although I heard that this area is a very dangerous one, because with the drug runners and the jungle being so vast, and also the unpredictable ocean.
Yeah, I mean, at that time, I think most overlanders looked for a space on a boat, or if they could afford it, maybe flew their bikes from Panama to Colombia to continue their journeys. But you made a raft out of 10 oil barrels and used your GS to power it. Why and how?
You know, in those days, I didn't know any bikers. You know, when I started off my around the world tour, I thought I was the only one who is traveling around the world. And nowadays, you hear about so many people doing the same journey. And in fact, when I was in Canada, it was the first time I met, I got to know that there are motorcycle meetings. So, you know, without that knowledge that, you know, there's this, you know, you could take a motorcycle with a boat to Colombia, I mean, from Panama to Colombia, it seemed like a big adventure to me. I mean, I love adventure and I wanted to do something unique anyway. So this was the opportunity. So I was basically trying to figure out how to, you know, go from Panama to Colombia. I mean, if there was if there'd been a ferry, I would have taken it because I did that quite a few times when I was traveling from, you know, through the Indonesian islands. Like I took many times.
You're an engineer, and you know you've got a creative mind, and from watching the film, you'd been pondering about this for some time, hadn't you? If it's possible, as a technical solution, to do something like this with your motorcycle. And I think that had been playing on you, and I think you just wanted to somehow find a way to make that happen, didn't you?
Yeah, absolutely. Later on, you know, I started thinking of how to make a raft, you know, cheap as possible, because I didn't have lots of money at the time. You know, it was 2.5 years after, or even 3 years after I had started my journey. So it was like, you know, my money was like going out. So I had a few dollars left. So I remember, you know, sitting in my tent thinking about how to create a raft, you know, the cheapest way. So the one idea was to get PET bottles. You know, I thought, seriously, I was thinking about, you know, collecting loads of PET bottles and, you know, create a raft with that. But then later on, I came up with the idea of building a raft with 10 oil drums. That was the easiest and the safest, you know, you could, so you could put a motorcycle on it. So the idea was to, you know, use my motorcycle engine as the power source. Instead of the rear wheel, I connected a shaft to the final drive, and extended that with a 1.5 meter shaft and put a propeller on that, and you know, off I went.
It's just fantastic. It's the stuff of dreams, isn't it? You know, a little sketch appears in your mind, you draw it out, and you think, well, hey, this could work. And then you're in Panama, and you find a way, and you meet the right people, and people help you out, and all of a sudden you have this thing that you've built, but you didn't really have time to test it out, though, did you? You just set off because I think there was some bad weather forecast, or.
Yeah, there were quite a few reasons why I had to leave so quickly, because one thing was the rainy season was approaching, and the next thing was I had built a raft, but I couldn't keep it in that bay for too long before the police, found out that I was about to do an illegal journey. It was an illegal journey, actually, because when I wanted to get an exit stamp on my passport, they said, "No way, you're not going to leave Panama with that thing. That's not. You're going to get yourself killed. You know, we can't be held responsible for you." So so therefore, I didn't have much time and the opportunity to try it out. So I just took the chance and left.
Wow. I mean, talk about a leap into the unknown. I mean, you weren't a sailor nor a navigator. You didn't really even know if it would work. You just followed your dreams and, well, basically slipped away in the middle of the night, didn't you?
I had to. That was otherwise. It was the strangest thing, you know. You're just without being a sailor and without ever having been on the ocean before, all of a sudden you find yourself in the dark on 10 oil drums and with a motorcycle. It wasn't as funny as it sounds now. I had to learn very quickly how to sail, and you know, it's the navigation, and there was so much going on in that time. The wind was blowing from every direction, the waves, and yeah. But it was an adventure.
It's the essence of adventure. I mean, so there you are on a raft, powered by your GS and a tiny sail, taking on the mighty Pacific Ocean. I don't want to give too much away, Dylan, but how long did you originally think the journey would take? And how far out was this estimate in the end?
I thought the journey would take around 2 weeks. That's what I believe because, you know, Panama, that stretch was like, the journey was like 700 kilometers or 750 kilometers. I thought three weeks the most. But it took much longer to reach Colombia.
Yeah, I think in the end it was over 6 weeks, wasn't it?
I think it was like nearly 50 days.
Goodness me. I mean, there are so many things that happened during those weeks at sea that you could write a book about them. Well, in fact, you did. I mean, that was called When the Road Ends. That was published in 2015. I read that book soon after then. And then I met you at BMW Motorrad Days in 2016. And everyone that I'd spoken to who'd followed your original trip and heard your story or even read the book, they were saying that the best way to give people a chance to experience this amazing journey was for you to return to Panama, find some of those original characters that had helped you in the first place and retell this unique story, you know, as a feature-length documentary-style film. And, well, that's exactly what you've done, isn't it?
Yeah, when I set off at the beginning, I never dreamt of making a film. Even after having done all these adventures, I come home and I thought, yeah, I'd write a book and that's it. And I held quite a few presentations about my journey. But in 2010, I met a guy in Dubai called Ali. He's an Austrian guy born to Iranian parents. And he saw me in Dubai and he started following my journey. So once I came back, he bought my book and read it, and he said, "Hey Dylan, I really want to see you." So when I was passing through, I went to visit him, and he said, "You know, can you do a little presentation in my village?" Which I did, and then he saw my videos, and then he said, "Dylan, you really got to make a movie out of this. I have some friends, let's get together." So that's how this whole movie thing started, the idea at least. But then again, they wanted 100,000 euros to make a decent documentary, a 60-minute documentary, and I didn't have that money. And then we started a crowdfunding thing, but it only brought 6,000 or 7,000 euros. With that, you know, that was the end of my film. But then, you know, I always say when I do a presentation that, you know, when you are at the end of the road, you have to believe in yourself, and you know, you can build your own raft and take that, you know, do that journey by yourself. So remembering what I always preach to people, I said, "Hey, you are at the end of the road here again. Build your raft." So, you know, without being a filmmaker, I started making my movie.
Well, I tell you what, you're a quick learner, and you did a fantastic job, because I watched it over the weekend with my wife and son, and we were spellbound from start to finish. I mean, it's got all the ingredients, you know, of a perfect story. It's got drama, it's got inner conflict, tension, surprise, suspense, think sharks, memorable characters and setting. I mean, it's even got a surprising ending. So you must have enjoyed the process of reliving your adventure when putting all of that footage together.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, you know, even to this day, I can't believe that I was able to to create a movie such quality. I mean, you know, I'm not just blowing my own trumpet here. I'm just, you know, when I have this film has been seen by hundreds of people now, and every time, you know, people come up to me with tears in their eyes, because, you know, it's a powerful story. And I was lucky to have that powerful story with those special characters. It just, I don't know. I have been again a lucky man.
Well, I always think people make their own luck, Dylan. But yeah, like you say, you've showed the film to quite a few people. I think you managed to preview it in a few cinemas before coronavirus hit. But the good news is that it's now available worldwide for streaming and download on multiple platforms in multiple language and subtitle options. So can you tell us a little bit more about that, please?
Yes, Andy, it was quite unfortunate that we couldn't do an extensive tour with the film and show it in more cinemas. But the good thing is that we released it on the 12th of May, and now it's available on iTunes and Amazon, Google Play, and, you know, such major video on demand platforms to be seen. And also it's in three languages, plus you can watch it with subtitles in Italian, French, Spanish, and Japanese even. I think probably there might be even a few more versions coming out in the future.
Oh, that sounds fantastic. And of course, apart from the great storyline, there are so many positive messages throughout that film. Messages of optimism, hope, chasing your dreams, appreciating the little things in life, the kindness of strangers. It's all there. You packed it in, but I guess you certainly had a lot of time to think while you were stuck on that little raft, Dylan.
If I had time to think, yeah, I had a lot of time to think. There was nothing about, you know, I wasn't thinking about, you know, is it going to be a great story? My mind was full of, how am I going to get out of this at the time? Because, you know, I was on the biggest ocean in the world, and my raft was drifting in a wrong direction, and I had problems with navigation, and it was a big adventure, but everything else came, you know, a few years after.
Well, you did get out of it, of course, and because you're here today, we know that you made it to Colombia safely and finished your round the world journey. But what of Bruce, your GSA? What happened to him in the end?
Bruce, I had to bring back to Switzerland. I was originally planning on, you know, giving it to a museum in Buenos Aires or, you know, Argentina somewhere. But then the people in Switzerland said, no, you're going to bring that back to Switzerland. You know, if you don't have money, we will, you know, we'll collect some money and so you can bring it. So, eventually, I brought it back to Switzerland, and he's on retirement now, enjoying life in a barn somewhere in Switzerland. I didn't even wash Bruce after the tour. I just wanted to have him exactly as he was. I didn't want to, you know, change parts and start riding him again. So, yeah. I'm taking Bruce now and then to like exhibitions and different fairs, motorcycle fairs and meetings and things like that. But yeah, Bruce is a happy chappy here in Switzerland, thinking about all those adventures that he did with Dylan, the crazy guy.
Absolutely. Totally understand that. Totally understand not wanting to wash or change anything. And if people listening are wondering what happened to the raft, well, I'm not going to tell you. You're just going to have to watch the movie and see. But what about you, Dylan? What about your wanderlust? Have you still got those itchy feet and a desire to travel? Or have you got too used to the comforts of a camper van now you're married?
Yes, I still got itchy feet, but I'm not in search of anything. I'm a very happy man, much, much happier than when I started off on my journey. I'd say I'm just living to enjoy life rather than trying to, you know, look for the meaning of life, because I found out that the meaning of life is a very simple thing, and that is to be happy. And I'm doing everything that makes me happy right now.
Dylan, it's been an absolute pleasure, mate. Before we go, can you please point the listeners in the right direction so they can find that movie?
It's very simple. You just go to Google and give When the Road Ends, Lost in the Pacific, and I'm sure you'll find many platforms and a lot of information about it. You can also visit Ride to Explore. It's written Ride 2 and X without E, Plore. .com. You'll land on my website, and there's also a lot of information and a lot of background information to the film and how it came to be and the making of and all those sort of things. But it'll be available on iTunes, Google Play, and Amazon and such places, platforms like that. You simply just Google my name probably, and you'll find that movie quite easily.
We'll put those links in the show notes as well, just so people can find it easily, and I thoroughly recommend it. Thanks for coming on Ride and Talk, Dylan. Hopefully we'll see you at BMW Motorrad Days in 2021. Cheers, mate.
Thank you very much, Andy. It was a pleasure talking to you. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Dylan. What a story. And well done for bringing the film to fruition. Having seen the movie, I can thoroughly recommend it to anyone who dreams of seemingly impossible adventures in faraway places, with or without a motorcycle. Like all great stories, it's got something for everybody and will remain in your memory for a long time. That's it for now, but do let us know what you think of the film. Perhaps we can organise a special screening with Dylan at next year's BMW Motorrad Days. Thanks for listening to Ride and Talk today, and rest assured we'll be back soon with more unforgettable motorcycle stories. Bye for now.